Welcome to Radioactive Magazine. Sarah Campbell and Jeff Humfelt with Veterans for Peace are with us to discuss their activities, including their campaign to return the commemoration of November 11th to Armistice Day from Veterans Day. Sarah is president of the Kansas City chapter of Veterans for Peace. Jeff is one of their members, as well as a longtime labor activist and programmer with KKFI. Would one of you like to start by talking about 11-11-11?
Well, it was over 100 years ago that, you know, the world celebrated the end of World War
One. Okay, hang on just a moment. Try again, Jeff.
Go ahead, Sarah.
So over 100 years ago.
Over 100 years ago, the world celebrated the end of World War One, the war to end all wars. And that's, you know, it's since then, it was after World War II, the Congress decided that November 11th was going to be Veterans Day, which is you know, it's good that we want to honor our veterans, but we have to understand that took it away, you know, Armistice Day took November 11th away from its original purpose, which was to celebrate peace and to promote peace. And Veterans for Peace wants to bring back that aspect of November 11th to celebrate Armistice Day. And, you know, unfortunately, with it being made into Veterans Day, it has morphed into a celebration of militarism and even war, for that matter. And we think that that's wrong, and it really defeats the purpose of what this day was supposed to be about.
Yes. So do you have, I was out at your ceremony last Friday, November 11th. Unfortunately, my recording that I made was dominated by the sound of your Veterans for Peace flags flapping in the brisk breeze. So do you have an official Vets for Peace position statement that you want to read on that, or is that what just Jeff just said?
Well, Jeff gave a summary of it. I could read you the statement in full if you want, but
sure.
I think he surmised it pretty well. It goes like this, and this was published by our national office in St. Louis. Over 100 years ago in 1918, the world celebrated peace as a universal principle. The First World War had just ended, and nations mourning their dead collectively called for an end to all wars. Armistice Day was born and was designated as a day to be dedicated to the cause of world peace and to be thereafter celebrated. After World War II, the U.S. Congress decided to rebrand November 11th as Veterans Day. Honoring the warrior quickly morphed into honoring the military and glorifying war. Armistice Day was flipped from a day of peace into a day for displays of militarism. Veterans for Peace has taken the lead in lifting up the original intention of November 11th as a day of peace. As veterans, we know that a day that celebrates peace, not war, is the best way to honor the sacrifices of veterans. We want generations after us to never know the destruction war has wrought on people and the earth. Veterans for Peace is calling on everyone to stand up for peace this Armistice Day. More than ever, the world faces a critical moment. Tensions are heightened around the world, and the U.S. is engaged in military in multiple countries without an end in sight. Here at home, we have seen the increasing militarization of our police forces and brutal crackdowns on dissent and people's uprising against state power. We must press our government to end reckless military interventions that endanger the entire world. We must build a culture of peace.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, that's really important. As you were reading that, it reminded me of Dan Hale, who is in prison right now for basically providing to the American public a classified document that basically said that during a particular, 6-month period, 90% of the people killed with U.S. drone strikes were not the intended target. Now, from my perspective, I think that was classified not to keep it from any foreign enemy, but to keep it from the American public. So do you have any comment on that?
Well, I would say that something that most people do not understand is that, you know, even with World War II, there was a great number of civilians that were killed, but that ratio has grown greatly. And we no longer really wage war against armies or even rebels or whatever you want to call them, terrorists. We wage war against civilian populations. And you know, the latest war that we see on the news every night, the Ukrainian-Russian conflict, is a real good example of that. They're bombing, you know, apartment buildings and all these other things like that. They're bombing infrastructure, which is a war crime. You can't take out a country's electrical grid and water and everything else. That's a war crime. And so we need to understand that we are waging war against civilian populations rather than against a nation, you know, a state, so to say, or an army or something of that sort. That's just not the way, that's not what's happening, no matter what our intentions are.
Sadly, I agree. There's a scholar named John Mueller, M-U-E-L-L-E-R. He's a prolific author at Ohio State. He's also associated with the Cato Institute and a libertarian think tank. He's published a book on the stupidity of war, and he published an article on the Cato Institute website basically suggesting, documenting that if the Clinton administration had responded to the 1998 bombings of the U.S. embassies in Kenya and Tanzania, Osama bin Laden would likely have been extradited in September of 1998 to Saudi Arabia, where he would have been tried for treason and executed. And Al-Qaeda was being vilified by Muslim clerics all over the world after that embassy bombing, until 13 days later, the United States bombed a pharmaceutical plant in the Sudan and Al-Qaeda training camps in Afghanistan, at which point the Afghanis refused to extradite bin Laden. They said, if the United States is going to be such an evil empire, to use their terms, we don't think we need to extradite bin Laden. And clerics, Muslim clerics all over the world suddenly branded him a modern day Robin Hood, basically. So you also have another event on your annual calendar on Memorial Day. You want to talk about that?
Sure. So prior to me taking leadership with this chapter, our chapter president was Dale Kuhn, who is a survivor of the Chosin Reservoir in Korea. And when he passed, our chapter deliberated on what we should do with money that was donated to our chapter in his name. And we ended up buying a memorial brick and had it placed at the Korean War Veterans Memorial in Overland Park. And so every Memorial Day, we meet there in the morning and have an observance, and we talk about Dale, and his family attend usually, and it's a nice memorial there.
Great.
Yeah. An interesting thing is that we're not the only ones. There's another group of Korean War veterans that meet there, and they tend to meet after us, so we get to meet some of them.
Great. So how can interesting people contact you if they want more information about these events next year, or if they'd like to join or otherwise support Vets for Peace?
So our website is under construction, but we have a Facebook page. There is a fake Kansas City Veterans for Peace Facebook page. So if you're looking for the correct one, it is at Kansas City VFP. And there's another one that a former member who hasn't been active in over 10 years feels it's his First Amendment right to impersonate us. So he has his own version of our page.
That's and really cute.
Facebook will not intervene.
Yep. How unusual.
So yeah. we meet in, we started having our meetings in person again this month in November. We meet every first Saturday from 2 to 3 p.m. And we meet at the Vietnam Veterans Hall off of 31st and Main, a block east of there, across from the PBS station.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's 3027 Walnut Street. And we're on the first floor there.
Great. You have office space there, or is this just a room that you rent once a month?
They're not there on the weekend, so we just use their main hall there, and
wonderful.
They have some tables we set up at. Our members are veterans, but we have associate members that are family members of veterans, or even people just that believe in our cause, and you don't have to be a member or associate member to attend our meetings.
Great. So what got you into Vets for Peace?
Jeff, do you want to start?
Well, probably it was that, you know, I was one of those draftees. I was actually trying to get away from being one of those draftees during the Vietnam era. So I joined the Navy because I really didn't want to go over and be put in a position to have to kill or be killed. And that worked well for me as far as that particular thing. I had a number of different options at that time. One was I knew people in the pipeline to Canada, and I considered that. My mother had talked with the minister at her church, and he had offered to, write me a letter as a conscientious objector. And I said, well, I am a conscientious objector, but it isn't based in religion. So I refused that. I ended up, like I say, joining the Navy because I wanted to be able to affect policy down the road. And that's why I did not go to Canada. That certainly didn't work out quite the way I'd hoped as far as affecting policy. But you know, I was looking for something that would maybe give me a little bit of little bit of step into trying to keep us from going into war, and banding with other veterans seemed to be a pretty good idea. Also, you know, this goes to a lot of things. Veterans for Peace is involved in a lot of different things. We're, you know, the word synergy keeps coming back to me, because we have parts of our organization that are involved with the environmental movement. We have, and showing how the U.S. military in particular, because it is so huge, affects the environment. We have folks that are, of course, trying to make young people aware, the recruiters, and what they what the recruiters are doing, and all, and
the difference between what the recruiter says and what your actual experience.
Yeah,
will be
the recruiters will, some of them actually do lie to you. Others will not tell you the whole truth. You know, a good example is, all right, I can get you into electronic school, and you know, if you sign up for an extra 2 years, and but if you get in and you don't qualify for electronic school somehow or other, you still have that extra 2 years to serve, and you end up in something else. I mean, but they also don't tell you about, you know, they'll tell you, oftentimes they'll tell you things like, oh, you won't go to war and where you're going, you know, or what you're going to be in. And that has proven not to be true for an awful lot of people. They don't tell you about the moral injury as well as the physical injury.
Indeed.
And there's a group, they've been using video games and stuff like this for years to enamor young people with the military. And there's a group of veterans that have come together called Gamers for Peace. And they're on the Twitch platform, and they go after these games and go after the young people that play these games, and just to tell them, you know, hey, here's the reality. You know, war is not a game. It is a very real and damaging undertaking. And no matter what they tell you, they have the right to do whatever they want to with you once you sign that piece of paper.
Well, and the recruiters could be talking to 10, 11-year-olds in the chat feature of those games. And my opinion, that's predatory. Just like grooming a child for other activities. So if the person they're talking to isn't 18 yet, that's predatory. You're talking to someone who doesn't have the legal capability to sign a contract or make decisions for themselves. Our people go in and talk to these kids at all different adults, kids, whatever. But recruiters, it was bad enough when recruiters could start setting up tables inside the schools, and they're encountering people that aren't 18 yet. And that's predatory, in my opinion. And now that they can't make their recruiting goals and get enough people to join the military, they have people working full time, recruiters working full time in the chat feature of the video games.
We're talking with Sarah Campbell and Jeff Humphell about Veterans for Peace and Armistice Day. Go ahead.
Yeah, one of the things that you know I've found with this group is it's very interesting, and there are other veterans groups. You know, there's a Vietnam veterans group, and there's a couple others that are chasing me at the moment, but this group in particular has really embraced the younger and more recent war veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan in a way that I haven't seen in any of the other groups. And I think that's very important, but it's also caused some difficulties. The racism, the sexism that we are prevalent in the military, we're still in some of these groups. And these younger people have really called that out. And we've lost some members, but we've gained more through these discussions and all. And I think it's made us a better organization, for one. It's also, I can say for myself, it's made me a more aware and better person to understand these different things that these young people went through that I didn't. And,
right.
My thing. Now, I was, like I said, I was lucky enough that I did not have to go to a war zone. And some of them didn't either. But I think I saw something on the website, something like only 0.5% of the population of the United States goes into the military. And, I would say less than 50% of the people in the war action or any kind of action. So it's a pretty small number of people that actually see this. And this is why it's really important for us to take care of those people when they come back.
Agreed.
The suicides and the PTSD and the moral injury, the brain traumas and all that we're seeing now are really, really, really important for us to focus on.
Yeah, I totally agree. Veterans have, in the past have had it, but we're better aware and know better how to understand the symptoms and respond to them. As you were talking about that, I've long thought that the U.S. Congress could make great strides in getting rid of the sexism and sexual assault and racism in the U.S. military by opening a hotline or some back channel where anyone could file a complaint anonymously. And if the commanders of units that get statistically too many complaints don't get promoted. Any comments on that or anything else that you'd like to see the U.S. Congress do to address the racism and sexism issue?
Well, there has been a law that was passed here in the last couple of years around the military sexual assault issue. And they are taking away, it used to be that the commander of that particular unit or whatever, or that base was the one that everything went through. And they found that really had a lot of problems with it, because sometimes they maybe not encouraged, they just didn't see a problem.
Right. They would deliberately overlook it, suppress the investigation, et cetera.
Yeah. So now it goes to us, another, I'm not even sure who it goes to, be truthful. There's a board or something or other that's been formed that those complaints go through those people rather than through the commander of that unit.
Right. Another thing that my recent research revealed, basically, that I actually, in comments I had last Friday, is there's psychological research. Daniel Kahneman, who won the 2002 Nobel Memorial Prize in Economics, even though he's not an economist, talks about, says that even experts, too many experts can be beaten by simple heuristics and developed by intelligent lay people. To develop genuine expertise, he says you need rapid, high quality, frequent, rapid, high quality feedback on the quality of your decisions. So military leaders get that in terms of the ability to deliver death and destruction to designated targets. And national security advisors get that in terms of their ability to impress the existing leaders of the political economy. But in terms of winning a war, or even more importantly, securing peace and broadly shared prosperity for the long term, they're clueless. They have no some of them are not, but too many of them are clueless, and they get promoted basically on their ability to sell high big ticket weapon systems to Congress, partly because if they do that, they can get a cushy, high paying job after the military. We're talking about especially the high ranking officers. Any comments on that?
Well, you're pretty much on the nail head for me.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay, so we've been talking with Sarah Campbell and Jeff Humfelt of Veterans for Peace and Armistice Day.